Sai Ram, and welcome to this week's Radio Science Answering Booth, a show where you can drop your questions, confusions and dilemmas, and I sit here equipped with Swami's message and come up with solutions and explanations. But as always, let us begin by offering our most humble pranams at Bhagwan's lotus feet, for he is the source of the answers and the source of the questions too. This is Prem, your friend from Team Radio Sai, as always, here to host this week's show for you. This week also, I have two questions to deal with. Both listeners wish to be anonymous, but that's where their similarity ends, because their questions are quite different to say the least. But that is not until I share with you the quote for this week. Well, we have Deepavali coming around the corner, and it is the festival of lights. So our quote must be about lights and lamps, don't you think so? And that's exactly what I've got. It is a popular saying of Swami, and if you were to bump into me and ask me ever, tell me one saying of Swami that you like the most, I am more or less likely to quote this one. So what is the saying and why do I like it so much? Well, first let's listen to the saying. And the saying is this: I have come to light the lamp of love in your hearts, to see that it shines day by day with added luster. So repeating that quote again, I have come to light the lamp of love in your hearts, to see that it shines day by day with added luster. So that is the quote of Swami, and I'm sure all of you must have read this saying any number of times. Why do I like it so much? I feel Swami is giving us three promises or assurances through this one statement. One is, He will Himself light the lamp of love in our hearts, but He will not stop there. He will ensure that it shines continuously day after day, and also that it shines with added luster with every passing day. Now, isn't that beautiful? So what do we have to do? Is it that we can relax and Swami will do everything for us? I remember once Swami had called a classmate of mine for an interview. Swami then began reprimanding him for the many mistakes and mischiefs he had done before he joined Swami's college. Now the boy broke down and began weeping like a little kid. He said, Swami, I'm so bad, I'm full of bad feelings and thoughts, I feel so ashamed of myself. Swami then became his motherly self again. He put his hand lovingly on the boy's shoulder, pointing to the boy's heart and making a circular motion as if Swami was stirring the boy's heart. Swami said, Don't worry, sab clean karta hai. I will clean everything. What a loving Lord we have found. We go around life after life collecting filth in this heart of ours, and He says, Don't worry, I will clean it for you. Yes, all that we have to do is let Him enter our heart, and then make sure He is enthroned there forever. He will certainly light the lamp of love in our hearts, but we must first allow Him to enter, isn't it? And then stay there forever. And not merely stay, but rule our hearts. His slightest wish should be our command, and His command should become our ambition. And to make Him happy must be the purpose of our life. Having found such a sweet Lord, dear listeners, don't we owe this much to Him? With that thought, shall we head to the program? As I said, I have two questions today. I won't be mentioning the names of both questions, names of the people who have asked those questions, as they've requested that they wish to be anonymous. The first one is from a sister, and I asked one of our volunteers, Sister Sumana, to read the question for us. So this is the first question for today's answering booth.
Except me and my daughter, the others in my family are not Sai devotees. Members on my parents' side are devoted to Swami. I am working in a corporate as an analyst. I live in a joint family with my parents-in-law, my brother-in-law and his family of wife and two children at home. My husband stays in US most of the time due to his job. Duties at home are distributed among me and my sister-in-law. I do all the works and cook for the entire family in the morning and then go for my job. After coming back from her teaching job, as she comes earlier than me, she cooks in the evening, only dinner. She is from a very rich family and also smart in manipulating facts. She appears to be jealous of me, as I earn much more than her in my job, so she keeps filling against me to my in-laws and other members of the family. Finally, Now I am being forced by my in-laws to leave my job and take up the entire responsibility of the house. I am sure you understand how maddening it can be if, after being well-educated and holding a good position and name in my workplace, I have to leave my job and sit at home. I have been hinting this to my husband, but he says, "It is your business, deal with it yourself. Don't put me into it." I am really tired and pained with the tantrums of my sister-in-law. I am very capable of buying a separate house and pursuing my career, but I am worried if this will be acceptable to my in-laws and husband. I am totally confused. I would be glad if you can show me some direction to the problem.
Thank you for that question, sister. Yes, that's a practical issue typically faced in a joint family. First of all, let me appreciate you for the fact that you are still living in a joint family. I'm not going to dwell too much on why joint families are good. Maybe in answer for some other question, we'll speak in detail about that. But let me mention just a few points. Do you know that so many studies, even in macroeconomics, are now talking about the values of families? Because the strong relationship between family savings and the national financial stability is becoming more and more obvious now. And larger families tend to save more and form small pockets of socially and financially secure units. And sociology studies are revealing that children raised in big families become better citizens and form a better workforce too. For instance, we all know in China they've followed a one child per couple policy for over three decades now. And incidentally, it was eased to a two-child policy exactly a year ago from today, in October last year, not this particular day necessarily. Some studies have shown that the one-child policy in China, coupled with an increase in the nuclear families, has led to a lot of problems, some totally unexpected. For instance, an increase in child obesity. Simply put, children are way better off growing in joint families for many reasons, in spite of the small tips and inconveniences that tend to come up, like the one that you pointed out in your question. And joint families are good for the society too. So my answer will not in any way justify you coming out of the family. So let me put that first. Now that we have closed that option, let's see what we can do with your situation. There are three things we will have to do. Firstly, can we identify the source of the problem? I know it is your sister-in-law, but what is making her behave the way she's behaving? Having identified that, what are the solutions to deal with it? And lastly, can we list out a few things you can start practicing right away? And so that will be the order in which I will go about answering your question. Many times in discourses, Swami would say that we have to transcend animal nature. You know, Swami would say one of the best spiritual practices is to remind ourselves constantly, I am not an animal, I am a man. And he would explain that if we are truly established in human nature, that is more than enough. We will automatically progress to the level of divinity. What is this animal nature that we have to transcend? There are many, many qualities that define animal nature. I'd spoken about a few in response to one of the questions earlier, but I would like to mention one more today. Do you know that most of the animals tend to strike, sting, or bite more out of fear than anything else? Be it a snake, a scorpion, or for that matter, even predatory animals always strike only out of fear. And it is a mechanism of their defense. Even animals like a lion or a tiger in the wild do not look at humans as prey. They attack because either they are scared of you or because they fear they will lose their territory to you. And this nature is a typical animal nature, and we tend to carry this into our human lives. Now you will find this fear and aggression that is born of out of fear expressing itself in our own behavior many, many times. The behavior of your sister-in-law is mostly a result of such fear. I do concede that there are people who trouble others and draw happiness from others' suffering, but that number is very, very minuscule, and we can safely conclude that we are not likely to encounter too many such people in our day-to-day life, least in our own families. That is more an aberration of the human mind, I would say, and the ways to deal with that are completely different. But within a family, most often this kind of fight, especially between the equals in a family, is a result of fear. And that fear certainly comes out of selfishness, no doubt about that, but it is out of fear of losing out on respect or importance within the family. If this sort of confrontation happens within animals, then there will be confrontation and aggression from both sides. So the aggression will be countered with aggression from the other side. But when it comes to a human reaction to such fear, I think it has to be different, right? You will agree with me on that. We see in channels such as Discovery and National Geographic, you know, these men and women who tend to move closely with the wild animals. We see them sometimes cuddling with lions and tigers. So one such person who works in the wildlife sanctuaries was explaining how they tend to get friendly and close with such wild animals. First, when they go into the presence of such animals, they become very aggressive out of fear that I mentioned. But they have some techniques by which they remove the fear of the animal, some ways of giving confidence to that animal that they are not there as competition. Once that confidence is given, even these wild animals stop becoming violent. Of course, there is another reason why they become violent. That is when they see you as prey, but that is not relevant in this context. So we will not go there. So this should give us a hint as to how to deal with this situation after having identified that this kind of aggression and cunningness is a result of fear in that person. So what is it that you have to do? Instead of countering her moves or trying to exit the scene, as you mentioned, can you work on removing that fear? There are three reasons why this is the right approach. Of course, this is the right approach to do for all of us when in a situation like this, but I will be explaining more with reference to you based on the details you have mentioned. First point, when approaching any person, we have to believe truly that there is goodness in them. The choice is always ours. What are we going to deal with? Are we going to deal with the flaws in the person, or are we going to deal with the goodness which is there within each person? I think as people who have been inspired by Swami, in general, we must learn to believe in the goodness of people and believe in goodness even when it is not very obvious. Yes, we all have flaws, but there is goodness within, and if we can address that goodness, then we will be living like Swami. There are so many stories where devotees did this when faced with even hardened criminals. There's a story of a devotee, Mrs. Geeta Ram, into whose car a criminal who was being chased by police gotten, and he held a knife to her throat. And then she starts speaking calmly and lovingly and convinces him to surrender to police. There is another incident of a devotee of Swami from the US, Mr. Hal Honig. And he narrates that he would go around the city distributing sandwiches in the evening as his seva. Once a mugger gets into the metro he's traveling in and starts extorting money from the people at knife point. And Hal Honig sees this and tells himself, Swami, I know you are in that person too. So I am going to address that Swami with love. And then he's sitting towards the end of the compartment and constantly thinking, Swami, you are in him, you are in him, you are in him. When this mugger comes up to him, he very lovingly offers him a sandwich. And that man puts away his knife, sits down next to him and eats that sandwich. When the next station comes, he gets up, gives Mr. Honig a beautiful smile, says thank you and leaves. Of course, there are plenty of stories where Swami himself dealt with people with evil intent and eventually transformed them. I'm quoting examples of devotees, so we too feel that we can do it too. But these are cases of people dealing with criminals. Difficult individuals we come across in life are not even like that. There is plenty of goodness inside. Just a bit of selfishness that expresses as fear, jealousy, and then cunning. So when dealing with such people, believe that there is goodness and that they will respond to love. Here is the second reason why this approach of you removing her fear is good. Generally in the spiritual path, we have to remove undesirable emotions such as fear, hatred, anger, jealousy and so on from our minds. You know, that we all know and keep trying. But Swami says, as much as possible, we must not be the cause for such emotions in others, and when possible, we have to remove it from others too. That is also part of the spiritual exercise we have to undertake. Swami himself would go to great extents sometimes to avoid such feelings arising in people. Many times we have seen Swami will materialize something for some student and say, don't show it to others, unnecessarily you will make them jealous. There are times when Swami has taken back a thick chain he would have given a student and will give a simpler one, saying that if it is so thick, it will catch people's attention. And that is also one more reason why Swami would ask women to dress modestly and all of us to dress in a simple and less ostentatious manner. Because if we can in any way avoid others having any of these evil emotions, I think we must try. We cannot be completely responsible for what others thoughts and feelings are, but we can, to the extent possible, try to avoid such feelings arising in others. So if there is anything that you can do to remove your sister-in-law's feeling of insecurity and jealousy, I think you should do that. I'm not suggesting you go out of your way, completely suppress yourself or anything like that. There are some simple things that you can do, and anyway, we'll be coming to that a bit later. But before that, the last reason why this approach is right for you, you mentioned that in your family, only you and your daughter are devoted to Swami. The fact that you know Swami and others don't automatically calls for a more enlightened approach from you compared to the others. You have something that gives you an edge over the others, and that is Swami's guidance and Swami's message. So it mandates you to approach the situation with far more understanding, love and selflessness than you expect from the others. Look at it this way. Why is it that we are expected to be more kind when dealing with, say, a disabled person or with a mentally challenged person? Because we believe that they are at a disadvantage compared to us. So they deserve our kindness, patience and compassion, isn't it? Similarly, when we as devotees of Swami deal with someone who doesn't have the advantage of knowing Swami, I think it is our responsibility to be more patient, loving and understanding than that person. Otherwise, what is the difference between the two, right? Okay, now that we have established that what you have to do is to try to remove the fear and jealousy in your sister-in-law, what can you do? What changes can you bring in your everyday activity that can help you achieve this? Sometimes when people seek importance, giving them that little bit of importance will calm their mind and will make them more responsive to the kindness that you show, and will also bring out the goodness from within them. So do things which make her feel important. It may be little things you can do every day. You said she's a teacher. Sometimes we don't realize how difficult a teacher's job can be. You know, I get really exhausted when I have to talk at a stretch for 1 hour. Imagine a teacher who has to talk for 3 to 4 hours a day and in a class of 30 to 40 kids. Once in a while, speak to her in a manner that shows that you understand how difficult it is to be a teacher. Appreciate her and say that you admire the work she is doing. Of course, say it genuinely with love. I'm not telling you to fake it. You spoke about the division of work at home. Someday, if you have had an easy day at work, voluntarily offer to do the cooking that day in the evening. Just tell your sister-in-law to take a break and relax. See, these are really very, very small things. But when love is shown in this way, the goodness in that person is sure to come out. And all this will be possible if you believe that Swami is in that person. Tell yourself, Swami, I know you are in her. I want to show love to you who is in her. So to summarize, I'll certainly not advise leaving a joint family. Swami will not want that for sure. The reason why your sister-in-law could be behaving the way she is behaving is because she has a fear of losing importance in the house. And I explain how this is an animal nature hidden in all of us. This does not mean that that person is really bad or anything. All that you have to do is work on removing that fear. Then your problem will be solved. She will express her goodness more and it would be a step closer to Swami in your spiritual journey too. So what can you do? Try to show her more love, give her more importance. Do what it takes to win her confidence that you are there to be a good friend and a person whom she can trust that cares for her. But be prepared to sacrifice a little more than her. Be prepared to show more understanding and patience than her. Try to look for the good in her and appreciate it whenever an opportunity presents itself. I'll end with one of my favorite quotes. It is from Abraham Lincoln and it goes thus. Do I not destroy my enemies when I make them my friends? I would say that quote is the crux of what I've been trying to explain so far. So thank you for writing to us, sister. If you have any further questions, do write back to me. The next question is from a brother whom, as I said, wishes to be anonymous, and I've requested Brother Ganesh to read out the question for us. So let us listen to the question and then we will come up with the answer.
Sai Ram, I am working in an MNC and I hold a good position. I have a very, very good close friend whom I have known from childhood, and we have shared every happy and sad moment of life to the extent that we are working in the same place too. But sadly, he has fallen into bad company and slowly is adopting corrupt ways of raising himself to higher positions. He has started indulging in malpractices and I am a witness to it. Now, the real bad thing is, he has impregnated a girl who works in our office and she has come to me for help in explaining. I am quite sure that he may not like me interfering in such a personal matter. He has also taken to the wrong path of consuming drugs. So, in such a situation, what is my dharma? I am totally confused because if I try and explain, he may cut off our friendship and I will not even have any update of what he's up to. Can you please guide me?
Thank you for that question, brother. Thank you, Ganesh, for reading it out for us. Surely must be difficult to see a good friend losing his way in this manner. Of course, this question is more on the role or dharma of a friend and what one has to do in a situation where the friend is taken to wrong ways. But some of the details that you have mentioned does call for some specific action. So first I'll try to talk something in general about true friendship and one's role in such a relationship. And after that we'll try and go into the specifics. You know, we tend to use this word friend very, very casually. First of all, we have began using this word as a synonym for acquaintance. A person whom we happen to meet in our commute every day but never speak to. We refer to him or her as a friend. The person we know from childhood also is called a friend. Of course, we use adjectives and say best friend and good friend and casual friend or whatever to specify what type of friendship it is. And now with the advent of social media, the importance and meaning of this word is further diluted. If I call someone a Facebook or Twitter friend, it could even mean that I've never seen that person's face. And in such a case, if we come to know anything that is wrong in that person's character, he's lost his way or something like that, we will avoid him or her completely, right? We wouldn't like to associate with that person. But true friendship is not like that. I will not go into all that Swami has told about friendship and the idea of friendship, because the idea of friendship that Swami describes will certainly lead us to the ultimate conclusion that only God can be a true friend. But when we truly believe that someone is our friend, or more so, when we say that I am someone's friend, I feel we are bringing that person into our circle of happiness. Just like how when you get married, you bring another person and his or her family into your circle of happiness. When we truly accept the friendship of a person, we bring that person into our circle of happiness. This means my happiness now includes the happiness and welfare of that person too. When it is a normal acquaintance, I will move away when I feel that this person is doing wrong things, maybe after trying some general advice. But when it is a friend, I will have to ensure that he stops doing things which will eventually lead to his ruin. So, brother, from your question and the manner in which you have written, it is very clear that it is a real friend and you are indeed concerned about his welfare in future. So you have to be prepared to play the role of a true friend and not give up even when your friend tends to be very upset with you. Even if you are misunderstood, if he stops seeing you as a friend and tries to get even with you by getting you into trouble, you should be prepared to be patient and selfless. As I always say, most often being mentally prepared for what could come makes a lot of difference in the mental balance with which we handle the situation. So prepare yourself mentally first. Okay, now, what can you do in a situation like this? In general, they say there are four ways in which a situation can be dealt with. They are called the upayas or methods to handle a person or a situation. You must have heard of it before. They are called Samadhana Bheda Danda. Sama is trying to solve the issue by sitting and discussing, negotiating through calm explanations. Dana is when you tempt the other party by going in for a lucrative settlement. Like when the government offers some, say, rehabilitation benefits to the Naxals if they surrender. So dana is when you offer something in return for the solution. When sama and dana don't work, they say that you should try bheda. Now bheda is either done by threatening the opponent with consequences or by cunningly creating situations that will threaten the person. It is only when all these fail you take to danda, which is an all-out offensive. In the past, it used to be going to war as a last option, but in today's world, maybe we can say it is using the legal recourse or any such a drastic step. But we must remember that these upayas have to be used in the order mentioned, and only when the simpler techniques fail, we must use the harder methods, or if we are sure that the situation cannot be handled by the simpler methods. This is a very general approach that can be followed in any situation. You know, disciplining children, setting right subordinates in workplace, settling issues when there is one troublemaker in the group who is spoiling the peace of everyone, or in a situation like the one the questioner has put for us. Okay, now coming to the situation at hand, going by the description of the situation, I personally think it is beyond the stage of trying to calmly explain. If your friend was doing petty mistakes and was beginning to get into bad habits, yes, explaining to him in a friendly manner could have been useful. But still, if you feel that you can try explaining to him, I think you should. Even if what you say does not enter his head right now, when he turns around eventually and tries to correct himself, he will remember your words and will know that he can turn back to you as a good friend. So even though explaining in this stage will not bring benefit in transforming him right now, do try. He should not be given an opportunity to say, being a friend, you never told me I was wrong. Another approach can also be used is in trying to make him see his mistake is, you know, being his friend, you will know some of his weaknesses, right? When I say weakness, I mean there must be someone in whose eyes he will not wish to be seen as bad. His parents or siblings or nephew or someone like that. I don't know if he is a Swami's devotee. If so, even Swami can be used. Try telling him what will happen when these people come to know that he is corrupt like this. He has taken to bad habits. What will happen if they come to know of this? This can be a very effective way of making him see his mistake. And this you may be able to do only because you are a very close friend. If explaining this way doesn't help, try avoiding him purposely. Show that you are very upset with his ways and you do not approve of his actions. Let him feel that you do not respond to him anymore. But of course, you should be prepared and ready to be of help to him when he really needs it, and if it will help him correct himself. So even if he feels you no more care for him, it's all right. You know what you're doing it for, right? Now, if you have to use the other harder techniques, there are some things you have to keep in your mind. What is important in this situation is your intention. When you are clear you have to help your friend, you should be prepared to maybe appear rude, appear indifferent, deceive him or even get him into trouble if necessary. You cannot say, I don't want him to misunderstand me and feel I'm interfering too much and so on. Remember clearly that as long as your intention is to make him give up his bad ways, it is for his welfare and not for any other selfish reason. It is not wrong to use a bit of cunningness in your approach. See, when a person has strayed so much into corrupt ways, it is an indication that the mind has become very, very selfish. So it is difficult to appeal to the goodness of such a person. So you will have to use techniques that will appeal to his selfishness. I'm not sure what kind of work both of you do, what is the nature of your job, so I will not be able to be very specific. But can you tactfully create situations where you can show him what will be the end result of his ways? Can you manipulate a situation where you can scare him with a serious consequence and then tell him that this is what will happen if he pursues his corrupt ways? So that way you will be appealing to his selfishness. Fearing harm to himself and his career, he may change his ways. So if creating this situation calls for you to hide some things from your friend, faking some things and manipulating some facts, it is absolutely permissible, because it will help him eventually. You can pray to Swami and do what is required. In fact, use this technique of appealing to his selfishness even when it comes to explaining to him. You mentioned that he is into drugs. Explain to him how a habit such as this will eventually eat away everything that he is proud of today. How he will lose his intelligence, use up all his earnings and will lose the respect, name and fame that he is trying to accumulate through his corrupt ways. His mind is in such a state that you can appeal to the logic of the mind only through addressing his self-interest and image in society. If none of this works and you feel the situation is going out of hand, maybe you will have to consider reporting him. I mean, if his actions are harming the organization in a big way and is affecting others, I think the last option is to probably report his actions to the seniors and have some action taken against him. Remember, even if he loses his job in the process, I feel it is okay. You would have stopped him from sinning more and more. But keep that as the last and final option. Now, coming to the issue of the girl that you mentioned, before anything else, understand that here the mistake is as much on the girl as it is on your friend. So make it clear to her that you don't approve of what she has done and you are willing to help only if she is ready to get into wedlock with your friend. You are willing to discuss only that option with your friend and nothing else. But even that, don't promise to do right away. Ask her to give you some time, maybe a month or so. If you try the methods I mentioned above, he should be in a more receptive frame of mind for you to take up the issue later. And even in this issue, you can adopt the same sequence of trying to explain and then threatening with action such as bringing it to the notice of his family and so on. So to summarize, whatever I've said so far, if you consider yourself to be his true friend, then yes, correcting him and bringing him to the right track is your responsibility. Then I explained that in any situation that needs to be dealt with, there are four approaches which have to be used in the sequence mentioned. They are Samadana Bheda Danda, explaining and negotiating calmly by trying to tempt the people involved to come to an understanding, threatening with action, and finally, offensive action. And it goes without saying that driving force must be dharma. You cannot have a wrong motive and say, I have followed the sequence of Samadana Bheda Danda, so I am fine. Just using these four techniques in the order mentioned does not make a dealing dharmic. If your intention is dharmic, then using these four upayas is the right method. Specific to this situation, if you feel you need to explain any more, please do. Do not hesitate with the idea, it is not my job to interfere. Even if your words don't transform him now, after his mind changes a little, your advice may be useful. After that, make it very clear that you are upset and disgusted with his ways. You can even pretend to have snapped your ties with him. Maybe the thought that he has lost a good friend may prick him somewhere. Since he has taken to some wrong ways, which are a clear sign that the mind has taken to strong selfishness, explaining right and wrong is not likely to help. So can you tactfully create situations where you show him that what will happen if he continues in the direction he has taken? If your intention is pure, it is okay to use a bit of deceit and manipulation in the process to do this. Just give him the scare of how badly he will be affected when he gets caught. That will appeal to the selfishness of the mind. Then being a close friend, you are sure to know some weakness of his, a person he respects or a person who respects him, in whose eyes he would not like to be exposed. Can you make him see what will happen if he is exposed before that person? If none of these work, the last option, of course, would be to report his actions to the higher-ups to ensure he does not keep making further and further mistakes. But all through this, whatever he may think of you, he may even behave in a manner that may hurt you. But you remember you are doing it for a friend, and when he really needs you, you will have to be there to help him. And all of these explanations should include the habit of taking drugs and the company that he's keeping too. Try to explain how all of this is a vicious cycle, one leading to another. Once you correct him with regards to this corrupt ways, once transformation begins, he should be more mentally conducive to listen to your advice and counsel, and he can be made to give up even drugs and the bad company. Finally, with regards to the girl, make it clear to her that you do not approve of her actions as much as you don't of his, and you are willing to help only if she is considering marriage. And you can ask her to give you some time before you take up this particular issue with him. once he realizes his mistake a little and starts listening to your words, you can bring up this issue also, and then he will be ready to listen to you. So do try sincerely with prayers to Swami what has been suggested. Be patient, for friendship is all about understanding and acceptance. Remember, to give a hand and pull out a person drowning in water, you must be on firm ground. So to be able to help your friend get out of these undesirable ways, you have to be stable and sure of yourself. If you can play the role of that ideal friend, take it from me, your friend is half out of his problem already. One good true friend can counter the effect of any number of bad acquaintances. So don't think how much you can do. Use this opportunity to play the role of a true friend. You will definitely be able to help your friend. If you want any more clarifications on what I said, brother, you can write back to me. Thank you for that question. So this is what I thought I will give as an answer to that question. With that, dear listeners, it's a wrap on today's show. I thank the listeners who sent me those questions, and I thank all those who are sending me questions. I'm handling the queries in the first-come, first-served basis. So if you have a question that you would like me to answer, send it to me. I invite questions to my personal email address, which is prem@radiosai.org. That is prem@radiosai.org. I would be really, really glad if you send me a question in your own voice. But if you wish to be anonymous, you can always let me know, like the listeners in today's show. So let me sign off by extending my advance greetings for all of you for the Diwali, which is coming this weekend. Of course, I'm coming back in a bit for the afternoon satsang, but we'll meet you next week for the next episode of Radio Sai Answering Booth. Don't go away. Coming after a while is the first episode of a new musing series that Professor Venkatraman is starting today. Hope you enjoy the rest of the Thursday and our broadcast for the rest of the Thursday. Thank you for joining me. Do join me again next week. Sai Ram.
Heralding the heavenly 91st birthday celebrations of Bhagwan, Radio Sai offers you a new series, To Lose Ourselves in the Seraphic Bliss of Sai Bhajans, The Vintage Sai Bhajans Classroom.
Bhajan karo harinamam madhuram, dhyan karo Bhagwan Sai namam.
This series is an effort to revive and relish beautiful melodies that enthralled Bhagwan during the Prashanti Bhajan sessions in the yesteryears.
Sri Ram, Jaya Jaya Ram, Raghupati Raghava Raja Ram.
It's time now to recreate and relive those olden golden tunes.
Narahari Rupa Namo Narayana.
Starting from November 3rd, 2016, every Thursday at 6:45 p.m. for 9 successive weeks, you get an opportunity to discover a Sai Bhajan and delight in its melody.